morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We are podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org. You can hear the show there anytime you want. It's archived into the distant past thanks to Santa Fe's Dotfoil Computer Services. And you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can also find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. Later on in the program, we're going to be speaking to neighborhood advocate Rick Martinez and singer-songwriter Julie Sinatra, who's also author of the book Under My Skin, My Father, Frank Sinatra. I'm delighted now to welcome photographer Ricardo Martinez. His exhibition, Ruta Sinuosa, Photographs of Copper Canyon, Mexico, is opening tonight in the Visual Arts Gallery at the Santa Fe Community College from 5 to 7. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much for having me here with you.
So these are pictures taken in the Copper Canyon region, the Tarahumara people of Mexico. You've got pictures of Indians, mestizos, outsiders, landscapes, four big categories in your show. When were you there? How did this project begin?
Well, it began in 1994 when there was a lot of news about the big long drought and people having to go to extremes and were starting to die of starvation.
And infant mortality.
Infant mortality, more than anyone. The kids were suffering, and it was the rate was, horrendous in some areas, up to, they say, 80%.
80% infant mortality.
80% infant mortality, which is 4 out of 5 didn't make it to 5 years old. So it was a very, very striking, and it was, there had always been a myth in Mexico about nobody dying of starvation. There's always food for everybody in Mexico, but turned out that it wasn't true. So being an indigenous ancestral group living in the same lands they have lived for many, many centuries, it interests me to go and find out what was going on. So I, asked for some money here and there and got some materials from Kodak and got myself on the train and went up there and started taking a look at that reality there.
So you weren't really going in just as a photojournalist. You were there and you stayed for a really long time.
Yes, the project, kept having a life of its own. I went there. I met somebody very special the first night I got there, and we were actually living together 2 days later, and she's now my wife for 15 years. So that was one thing that changed the scope of things. I stay there living in a little cabin with no running water and electricity for about a little over 3 years.
Now, did the people who you were photographing, and it was a lot of different people and different kinds of people, did they understand what you were doing?
I don't think they understood fully. They thought they knew I had an interest in taking photographs, and I would come back with the photographs to them, and they liked their photos. So it was more the concept of a photographer over there. It's more like an event photographer, like you go and take photos on a wedding, or go and take photos on a quinceañera, the coming of age celebration. Not in a documentary way of trying to show reality as a whole there. So I guess they didn't care much either, and they liked the photos that I gave them, of each person. So I don't think they really cared too much what I was doing.
But nevertheless, they accepted you. You made real relationships with a lot of these people who are friends to this day.
Very much. And for me, the camera was a way to get close to people. It's an easy way to open doors. When you're with a camera, you have a motif to go and ask and start a relationship with somebody, and start talking and say, hey, do you mind if I'm here and I hang around and take your photos, and little by little, or sometimes you knew them previously from something different and then came back the next time with the camera and they were open to your work there,
So some of the people, and it's a small percentage of them, were people who had really no Spanish or Catholic influences. What were their lives like? Some of the photographs of these people are in the show.
Right. There's one of a very, very old man, the Anciano Fabian, and they calculate around about 3% of all the Tarahumaras. The Tarahumaras are supposedly number around 70,000, something like that. It's difficult because of the terrain where they live, and nobody even has like birth certificates, so you can't really know. There's no census, but it's estimated around 70,000.
So kind of the size of Santa Fe.
Yeah. So it's a big number in a very large area and very rock terrain area.
Right.
But it's about the same amount of people, and about 3% of them are from what anthropologists called Cimarrón, and people call them the wild ones because they're kind of renegades that never wanted to participate in any kind of Spanish-influenced culture, so they just kept moving to more remote and more out-of-everybody's-way territories. And when I started this project, there was they were saying that they were the ones that were being more affected, you know, around up from Batopilas and the Yerba Buena, the Mesa Yerba Buena and Salto Blanco, and these areas, you know, with they were saying there were a lot of dead children around there.
Being affected by the drought,
by the
infant
drought.
Mortality.
Correct. Which was the motor of this research or this work in the beginning. Little by little, it worked to a much bigger thing because of, you know, there's so many aspects to this region. You know, there's
right.
the richness and the beautifulness of the Tarahumara people, you know, and the way they live and the way they hold to their land and to their beliefs and to their traditions, you know. Then you have interesting people like all the mestizos who are very much like pioneers, you know, in a remote area where they have no compass and they have to invent themselves, you know, in any way they can. And so the project kept growing and growing, and you know, all the way to in the year 2000, I went to follow some of the Tarahumaras all the way to the border town of Ciudad Juárez and stay with them in their little makeshift. Not stay with them, went to photograph them. In their little cardboard houses, you know, that they make there to survive. They go work as laborers and go back and try to stay together, which they don't do in the Sierra. In the Sierra, they live apart from each other.
Right.
They live, you know, in little ranches or farms as far away from each other as they can, you know. And here they need to live there and in a little community because of the harshness of an urban environment. They get together and preserve their language and all that. And so this project came all the way up to the border and border crossing and the implications of drugs being trafficked and produced in this region and passing by, and the money lives there and how it gets to the border, and so many issues involved, and so close to here, to Santa Fe. You know, it's amazing how people don't realize how close we are to that reality, and that actually